Good morning.
Good morning.
It's good to see you. It's good to be here this morning. I want to begin by saying thank you to Patrick for leading that song for me this morning. It's a way to introduce our lesson. I kind of threw it on him in the last minute, so thank you, Patrick. All of self, none of thee. Some of self, some of thee. Less of self, more of thee. None of self, all of thee. To me, that song depicts really the battle of Christianity, isn't it? It's our willingness, our fight to rid ourselves of selfishness, of selfish desire and longing to fulfill the flesh, to win that battle over for God, to give ourselves totally to Him. This morning, as I was reading John chapter 10 this week, and I was struck by what Jesus says here. Of course, John chapter 10, he spends some time talking about how that he is the good shepherd. And he talks about all the reasons why he is the good shepherd, as opposed to the hired hand who has no care for the sheep. It is the good shepherd that sacrifices himself, that sacrifices himself to protect the sheep, to do all in his power to lead and guide those sheep. In the passage that was read for us, Jesus says, "I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me. Just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, I lay down my life for the sheep. And I have other sheep that are not of this fold. I must bring them also. And they will listen to my voice, so there will be one flock, one shepherd. For this reason, the Father loves me. Why? Because I lay down my life, that I may take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down, and I have authority to take it up again. This charge I have received from my Father." And so Jesus is defending the reason he is the good shepherd. And he puts it all on this one thing, that he's willing to go way beyond what any other shepherd is willing to do. He is the good shepherd because he lays down his life, not involuntarily, but voluntarily. The greatest act of human love toward human beings ever shown was that in Jesus Christ. This morning, as we talk about love and devotion, I want to go back and I want to look at another great act of love and devotion in the Old Testament. And I want to begin by looking at Genesis 17. In Genesis 17, we have Abraham and Sarah at the time, and they have left their homeland, and they've been led by God. And they're given a promise because of their devotion to God in Genesis 17. You notice there, God said to Abraham, "As for your wife Sarai, or as for Sarah, your wife, you shall not call her name Sarai, but you shall call her name, shall be her name. I will bless her, and moreover, I will give you a son by her. I will bless her, and she shall become nations. Kings of people shall come from her." Then Abraham fell on his face and laughed and said to himself, Shall a child be born to a man who is 100 years old? Shall Sarah, who is 90 years old, bear a child?" And Abraham said to God, "Oh, that Ishmael might live before you." God said, "No, but Sarah, your wife, shall bear a son, and you shall call his name Isaac. I will establish my covenant with him as an everlasting covenant for his offspring after him." So as we know, God in Genesis 12, as he's calling Abraham out of his homeland to go to a place that he'll show him, Abraham does that faithfully, and because of that, God lays on him three great promises. One of those being that through his seed many nations will be blessed, and that by him many nations will be born, and that God will provide to them a land. Well, for that to happen, Abraham and Sarah are going to have a child. And the older they get, in human eyes, the more complicated things become. And at one point, we know Sarah devises a plan to bring in her handmaid to Abraham so that maybe they could help God out in fulfilling this promise. And Ishmael is born out of that. And so Abraham, again trying to help God, tries to convince God that Ishmael can be that son. But God's answer is what? No. I told you I would give you a son by Sarah. I promised you that. And he says, I'm going to give you a son. You shall call his name Isaac. And that's interesting. The name Isaac means laughter. Names are important with God, especially when he changes or gives a name. Both Abraham and Sarah laugh at the prospect that God would bless them. Well, despite their laughter and the laughter of maybe others, God fulfills that promise, doesn't he? Genesis chapter 21, verses 1 through 7, the text tells us the Lord visited Sarah, as he said, and the Lord did to Sarah as he had promised. And Sarah conceived and bore Abraham a son in his old age at the time of which God had spoken to him. Abraham called the name of his son who was born to him, whom Sarah had bore him, Isaac. And so God fulfills his promise. Now, can you imagine what it was like to be Abraham the day Isaac was born? Now, we have a lot of fathers and grandfathers in here. How excited were you when your child was born? What was that anxiety like as you awaited the birth of your child? How did you feel? Excitement? Joy? I bet a few of us cried. Now just imagine you're Abraham and you have all those same excitement, all that same anxiety and all that same joy, but multiplied. He's an old man. He's well beyond what many would say were child-rearing years. And here he is having that son that God had long promised him by the woman he loved so much. Oh, that must have been an exciting day. And there must have been many tears that were shed. He says in verse 7, Sarah says, verse 7, who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children? Yet I have borne him a son in his old age. Do you think they were on a spiritual high that day? And things continued that way. In verse 8, it tells us, it goes on to tell us that Isaac grew and became stronger, and eventually he was weaned and started to become a man. How attached do you think Abraham was to that son? What kind of bond do you think they had with one another? And then we get to chapter 22. And I want to spend just a little bit of time here. And I want us to try to get into the mindset of Abraham and what he must have been thinking, what he must have been going through. In verse 1 of chapter 22, the text reads, after these things, God tested Abraham. And oh, what a test he's going to lay at the feet of Abraham. And said to him, Abraham. And he said, here am I. And probably one of the most tragic horrifying verses. Verse 2. He, God, said, take your son, your only son, whom you, what? Love. And go to the land of Moriah. And offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I shall tell you. You ever been given a direction or something in life that just completely knocked you off your feet? Somebody asked you to do something that just seems so unbelievable that you just had to take a minute and think about, did I just hear you right? I don't think I heard. Can you repeat that? Now, Abraham doesn't do that. I may have. I may have said, whoa, what? What? I waited how long, and now you're going to tell me I need to go and sacrifice him as a burnt offering? Now, Abraham and Sarah have already tried to help God out several times. You might be kind of inclined to think, well, maybe here's a good time they might try to help God out. You don't mean that, God, do you? That's not what they do, though, is it? Verse 3 tells us that Abraham rose early in the morning. He saddled his donkey and took two of the young men with him and his son Isaac. Now, if I've got this burden over me, I don't think I'm getting up early in the morning and then getting started, right? Wouldn't you look for every possible excuse to procrastinate this? Oh, I can't go today. Man, I forgot. I've got so many things I've got to take care of. That's not what he does. He rises early the next morning. He saddled his donkey. He took two young men with him and his son Isaac, and he cut wood for the burnt offering and arose and went to the place in which God had told him. Can you imagine what it was like to cut those pieces of wood? Isn't it interesting that the scripture actually tells us he did that? How agonizing do you think each of those saw blades, each of the chops of wood would have been? To know what this is going for. To know what you're going to have to do. And yet, God doesn't even take that away from him. He makes him chop that wood. He makes him cut that wood. And so he does it. It says on the third day, a three-day journey, Abraham lifts up his eyes and he sees where God's wanting him to go. Verse 5 tells us, then Abraham said to his son, said to the young men, interesting, we'll come back to this later. He says, stay here with the donkey. I and the boy will go over there and worship and come again to you. And so they walk up that mountain. Verse 6 tells us that he laid that wood on his son in his son's arms. Now, often, forever, when I pictured this event and what was happening, I always pictured him being, what, a young lad, like 7, 8 years old at the oldest, right? Well, a lot of scholars have looked at this and other people have done some study, and actually, a lot of people believe he's like 20 years old. At this point, when you look at the time, and we get into that study, I don't have time for that this morning, but he may be older than what we're even considering. And they're walking up there. And don't you imagine Abraham's, he has some tears maybe coming down. He goes on to tell us, and Isaac says to his father, in verse 7, my father. And he said, here I am, my son. He said, behold the fire and the wood. But where is the lamb for the burnt offering? You ever had some convicting questions asked by your children? Not ready to give that answer because you want to hide that from them? Whatever horror may be going on in your life. Maybe it's an illness in the family. Maybe it's an illness with them. Where's the lamb? What an answer Abraham gives. Verse 8. God will provide for himself the lamb for the burnt offering, my son. And so they go on, and he goes to the place, and he builds that altar, and all the time that he's doing that, I just imagine all this is running through his mind, and he's wondering, what's God going to do? I can't believe I'm doing this. Verse 10 tells us, Abraham reached out his hand, took the knife to slaughter his son. Wow. What must have been going on with him? What could have led him to this moment? It's interesting in verse 6, the two of them walk together. And there are these two people, and they're walking up there, and Abraham all the time knows what God's required of him. And what anxiety, what hurt must have been going on in his heart. There are a couple questions that I want to ask. First obvious question is, how in the world could God ask Abraham to do this? How could God ask of a father to sacrifice, to kill his only son? It's interesting, especially when you think about Deuteronomy chapter 12 and verse 31. When he, through Moses, tells the children of Israel that they are to avoid the idolatry of the land they're going into. And he points out some of the reasons why. Verse 31, the text reads, you shall not worship the Lord your God in that way, in the idolatrous way. Why? For every abominable thing that the Lord hates, they have done for their gods. He says, the way they worship is an abominable thing. It is disgusting. It is vile. Why? Notice as he ends, for they even burn their sons and their daughters in the fire to their gods. What's God's opinion of child sacrifice? Pretty straightforward, isn't it? How could God then ask Abraham to do this thing? When he forbade child sacrifice, the answer, I believe, is that God never intended to allow Abraham to sacrifice his son. Now, if we are in Genesis 22 again, we know what happens as he has the knife in his hand. He's ready to slaughter his son. The angel of the Lord called him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham, here am I. And the angel said, do not lay your hand on the boy or do anything to him. For now I know that you fear God, seeing that you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. God knew that he wasn't going to ask Abraham to do this. God knew that this would never get that far. But go back to verse 1 of Genesis 22. What was God doing? He was testing Abraham. He laid out a test for him. What was he testing? His faith, his trust, his devotion. Was there anything that Abraham would hold back from God? Was there anything he would not do for God? How devoted was he? Later in 22, in verses 15 and following, the text reads, "And the angel of the Lord called to Abraham a second time from heaven and said, 'By myself I have sworn, declares the Lord, because you have done this and have not withheld your son, your only son, I will surely bless you, and I will surely multiply your offspring as the stars of the heavens and as the sand that is on the seashore. And your offspring shall possess the gate of his enemies, and in your offspring shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, because you have obeyed my voice.'" Is there sometimes God, it seems like we don't understand what God's asking of us or why he's asking it? God, why would you want me to do that? God, why would you want me to go there? Why would you want me to do those things? Must have been in Abraham's mindset. And that leads me to my second question. I kind of understand why God did it. The Bible declares it to us. But here's the other question. How could Abraham do it? How could he sacrifice his only child? There are things I could imagine myself doing, but in any way harming my children is so foreign to my mind. I could not imagine that. Or anyone else doing that to my child. I would die for my child. I would sacrifice everything. How could Abraham do that? It's interesting, back in Genesis 22, 9 and 10, when they come to the place of which God had told him, and he builds the altar, and he takes that knife in his hand. What is he thinking? You ever wonder that? What's going through his mind? The book of Hebrews actually gives us some good insight into what his thinking is. Hebrews chapter 11, beginning at verse 17, the Hebrews writer says in regard to Abraham, "By faith Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, who he had received, and who he had received the promises, and was in the act of offering his only son." Notice what it says there. Don't miss that. He was in the act of offering his son. The knife was up and it was ready to descend. So don't in your mind doubt that Abraham was having any second thoughts. He wasn't. He was in commission of the act God had called him to do. There was no doubt in the mind of Abraham he was going to do what God asked of him. Can you imagine the devotion of Abraham? To have that kind of faith in God. And notice as it goes on. 18. "Of whom it was said, 'Through Isaac your offspring be named.' He considered that God was able even to raise him from the dead, from which he figuratively speaking did receive him back." Why was Abraham able to do that? When they went on that mountain, in Abraham's mind, Isaac was sacrificed. In his mind, he'd already done it. How? He remembered the promise of God. God told him, through Isaac, your son, you will have generations to come. Through Isaac, your son, the nations of the world will be blessed. He knew God would fulfill his promises. That day when Sarah gave birth to Isaac, there was something that happened in the heart of Abraham that he gained an assurance in God that we all should strive for. And I can only imagine, this is me guessing, is that when he looked in Isaac's eyes, he knew God would do anything he said he would do. If God made a promise to him, Abraham knew that promise was as sure as anything going to happen. That's the only way in my mind I can imagine him doing this. That he had such an assurance in God that God would fulfill each and every promise. And he knew God had made a promise to him through Isaac. He didn't know how he was going to do it. He imagined that God would raise him from the dead. See, in his mind, Isaac was already dead. But he believed God would raise him up. Abraham held nothing back from God. What was the test that he was given that morning? It really wasn't Isaac, but it was a test of faith. Was there anything that Abraham would be unwilling to give up? Was there anything in his heart that was more important to him than God? And there wasn't. God was the supreme thing in his life, and he was devoted to God. And he held nothing back. Someone once said, to be a great leader, you have to be willing to do what you ask of those who follow you. Don't ask anything you're not willing to do. Abraham held nothing back from God. Notice John chapter 10 again. John chapter 10 verse 18, I want to specifically look at that, and I want us to get in the mindset of Jesus in this moment. He says, no one takes it from me, what, my life, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down, and I have authority to take it up again. Jesus was watching Abraham. In John chapter 1, we know, and from many other verses, Jesus was there in heaven. Before he ever came to earth, he was there with God, and he was God. Jesus was one of the ones who asked Abraham to sacrifice his son. Jesus is the one who sat there and watched Abraham take him up the mountain. Jesus is the one who watched Abraham build the altar. Jesus is the one who watched Abraham bind his son. Jesus is the one who saw Abraham raise that knife. And Jesus is the one who didn't ask of Abraham more than he was willing to give of himself. God the Father was there the whole time. God the Father watched all of those things happen. And God the Father was not willing to ask of Abraham what he wasn't willing to do of himself. Jesus says, I don't have anybody taking this from me. In Matthew 26, verse 53, the text tells us, Jesus, in answer to Peter cutting off the ear of the high priest's servant, he says in verse 53, Do you think that I cannot appeal to my Father, and he will at once send me more than 12 legions of angels? What's his point to Peter and to everyone else? They're not forcing me to do this. They may have weapons. They may have swords. They may believe they have the power to arrest me. They may believe they have the power to strike me, to beat me, to put me on a cross. But it's all imaginary. They don't have that power unless God gives it to them. There's no one of you putting me on the cross. He could have called 10,000 angels in that song we sing. But he didn't. He could have. He could have said, God, my Father, take me away from this place. Rescue me. Destroy all these people. He didn't do that. He says, I lay it down in my own accord. God has held nothing back from us. You've been in a relationship where you feel like it's one-sided? I bet most of us have. When you feel like you give and give and the other person doesn't give anything. It's not that way with God. He's given everything. He didn't even withhold his only son. As Jesus hangs on that cross and he cries out in Matthew 27, 46, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, my God, why have you forsaken me? You know, we often think about the prayer in the garden as when Jesus says, let this cup pass from me. We often think about that as Jesus not wanting to go through physical pain. And maybe that's the answer. But let me just give you one other reason Jesus may have been praying, let this cup pass from me. He knew as he hung there on the cross, the greatest pain he may have suffered was not the physical pain, which was tremendous, which was horrifying. But the greatest pain may have been the pain of his heart. As he knew in that moment, he was cut off from his Father. Abraham did not have to sacrifice Isaac. God stopped him. There was nobody to stop what was going to happen to Jesus. God had to watch it unfold. To the point, he was no longer with his son. Does God love us? Does God love you? Absolutely. There's absolutely no doubt that God loves you more than you can ever know. What are you holding back from God? What to you is more important than Him and your relationship with Him? God has held nothing back from us. Why do we continue to hold back from Him? This morning, if you're not a child of God and you'd like to sacrifice yourself in a figurative sense and to become a child of God, we want to give you that opportunity this morning to be buried with Christ in baptism so that He died. You may die as well in a spiritual way, that you can be resurrected with Him. What about those who are formerly children of God, who've obeyed the gospel, who may be here this morning, who've living a life of sinful acts? We give you an opportunity this morning to change your life, to repent, to come home. Whatever your need, please come together. We stand and sing.